sure the odds are against anybody winning as a write-in, but, you know, 2010, if you look at the results state by state, so many things that happened this year were unlikely to happen.
Weighing the odds of a Murkowski write-in campaign. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 17th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, State Fish and Game Commissioner Denby Lloyd announces he'll step down.
Demands of a job like this take a toll, and I don't know if I have the drive or desire to keep up this kind of pace.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Lisa Murkowski has kept Alaskans in suspense about her possible write-in candidacy plans today. She'll be making her announcement in downtown Anchorage within the hour. Although the senator and her staff have been tight-lipped, others have not been, and emails inviting people to come to the campaign kickoff rally have circulated since earlier today. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer is at the Denina Convention Center and joins us now. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Lori.
So what's the scene there?
Well, people are filtering in. Many of them are carrying hand-lettered signs indicating a Murkowski write-in campaign. And it's fairly calm. There's a lot of media, of course. Now, it looks like the actual announcement's been pushed back until 6.
Okay, so you don't anticipate that you'll know during the newscast?
Well, we'll definitely call it in if we do. Now, it looks like it's been pretty much covered in various blogs that Murkowski is planning to announce a write-in candidacy. Her campaign, though, is very much not visible right now, except for some signs around that say, let's make history. So we'll see what history is being made in a little bit here.
And Ellen, how many people are waiting for the senator's announcement?
Well, they're still coming in. We're up here on the third floor of the Denina Center, and there must be, 200 to 300 people here already, and people are still coming in.
Are there any detractors in the crowd?
No, I don't see any opposition. However, I'm hearing through the grapevine that Joe Miller is having a rebuttal conference at about 6 at his headquarters. I don't know too much about that.
All right. Well, if she does make an announcement before we wrap up tonight, please give us a call back.
I will certainly do that.
All right. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer live at the Denina Convention Center in Anchorage. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He says it's not easy to run a successful write-in campaign. He can think of only one other senator.
That's Strom Thurmond in 1954. He was then a Democrat. He was a former governor, and he ran and won as a write-in candidate because there was a vacancy and the Democratic Party picked somebody else. And only 3 House members have ever been elected with a write-in campaign. Ron Packard of California in 1982, Joe Skeen of New Mexico in 1980, Dale Alford of Arkansas in 1958. That's 3 out of all the, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of members of Congress who have been elected, in the last century or so.
So those are quite a while ago, but in those campaigns, have you read anything or did you see anything that kind of gave you a sense of what it was that made the difference?
Well, a lot of things, there were a lot of individual issues there. Obviously, when Dale Alford won in Arkansas, it was about race. His opponent backed civil rights legislation, and that was obviously not so popular in Arkansas in 1958. Joe Skeen of New Mexico, the Republican who won in 1980, he was denied a place on the ballot after the Democratic incumbent died, so he could only run as a write-in. But this seems to be an indication of pique. And you don't see that too often with members of Congress. We did see Joe Lieberman from Connecticut in 2006 lose his Democratic primary and then run as an independent and won his seat. But that is extremely rare because, for the most part, everybody who's tried to run after they lose their primary has been defeated. And I think with Lisa Murkowski, it's just very interesting because, until the end, it looked like she never thought she was going to lose. Nobody thought she was going to lose to Joe Miller. And what's so ironic about this impending write-in campaign is that it's probably the only thing that has brought the Tea Party and the Republican Party together. Both the GOP and the Tea Party folks feel that she should stay out of it, saying, look, Joe Miller won the nomination fair and square, and he's the Republican nominee, and maybe she should run in 4 years against Mark Begich, but she shouldn't run against the Republican nominee, Joe Miller.
Well, we've certainly seen quite a shakeup of politics as normal across the country this year. Do you think that changes the odds at all?
Well, I mean, the odds really, I mean, it obviously for somebody, for Lisa Murkowski to be successful, she needs money, and she does have money. She needs name recognition, and she does have that. Plus the fact that if we keep hearing from voters that they say they're tired of the extremes, they're tired of the right wing and the left wing, and they want people more in the middle, then perhaps Lisa Murkowski does have this opportunity because she can make the case, or she probably would make the case, that Scott McAdams, the Democratic nominee, is too far to the left, and Joe Miller is too far to the right. But again, we keep hearing from voters who say they hate the partisanship, and yet almost in every primary we look at, it is a more partisan candidate that seems to do better. So, you know, we hear that the voters want these kind of middle ground, middle of the road candidates, even if it takes a third party or an independent candidate to get them there. But ultimately, when we look at the primary results, that's not what the voters are saying.
Yesterday, Lisa Murkowski said she thinks social networking makes it easier to run a successful write-in campaign. Do you agree?
I think there's truth to that. I think in the old days, you know, you used to wait for the party to do its thing, or you used to work for paid media. And I remember the old days, we'd have to wait for what Walter Cronkite said at 6:30 on the network news to find out what was really happening. Now, you could bypass the regular media. You could bypass the major parties. You can go on Twitter. You can go on Facebook. You can do a really bunch of social network kind of things that would afford a candidate an opportunity that these candidates never had years ago.
So what do you think, Ken? Does she have a shot?
Sure, the odds are against anybody winning as a write-in. But, you know, 2010, if you look at the results state by state, so many things that happened this year were unlikely to happen when the year began, and they happened anyway. So don't count anything out.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. While some voters might see the general election race as an extension or rerun of the Republican primary campaigns, there are still three major candidates vying for the job, and Democrat Scott McAdams' campaign won't be affected by a Murkowski write-in campaign. He has been traveling today following his debate with Joe Miller in Juneau yesterday. His communications director, Heather Handyside, says that when he entered the race in June, McAdams expected to run against a Republican Party that was united at the state and national levels, but that has changed after the primaries.
What we're finding is that there's a real rift within the Republican Party. We do know that Joe Miller has the full support of Sarah Palin and the Tea Party Express, who are going to start campaigning in our state again. I think that that'll be a significant distraction for Senator Murkowski. So I guess at this point, we just think it's anybody's race, and we really welcome how Scott is different from Joe Miller and Lisa Murkowski, and how Scott's vision for Alaska is the best vision going forward.
Handyside says there are any number of ways to look at how the votes will be decided, but Democrats believe the quibbling among Republicans will be a turnoff for voters, and they will take a fresh look at McAdams. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, reaction to legislation aimed at helping small business.
Entrepreneurs would have greater access to capital, and we're hopeful that all of our members will see those benefits.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Denby Lloyd, the commissioner of the State Department of Fish and Game, has said he'll retire in December. As Jacob Resnick of KMXT and Kodiak reports, Lloyd's departure will come just before he must appear in court.
There's been no official announcement yet, but Commissioner Denby Lloyd told Fish Radio's Lainey Welch this week that he'd been planning to retire for some time.
you know, demands of a job like this take a toll, and I don't know if I have the drive or desire to keep up this kind of pace.
All Governor's Office spokeswoman Sharon Leo would say is that Lloyd is on his way out.
So I can confirm Denby Lloyd, the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game, has announced his retirement. That will be effective on December 1st.
Lloyd's retirement will start just days before he's set to go to trial to face charges stemming from an alleged drunk driving incident. Lloyd was arrested in downtown Juneau last month and charged with driving while intoxicated and reckless endangerment. The officer reported Lloyd's blood alcohol level was 0.143% in a breathalyzer test. Following his arrest, Governor Sean Parnell said he was suspending judgment but takes the case, quote, very seriously. The governor's spokeswoman would not comment today whether the timing of Lloyd's retirement was linked to the charges. In Juneau, the city prosecutor's office says Lloyd is next due in court December 6. His defense attorney, Louis James Menendez, declined comment. In his interview with Fish Radio, Lloyd didn't mention the incident or any political pressure, though he did say it was a matter of timing.
The timing seems right now. We're towards the end of the term, but I also want to give some time for the staff to get used to the idea, for the constituents to decide who they might want next for commissioner.
Lloyd worked in Kodiak as a staff biologist for Fish and Game in the 1970s. Later, he went to work for the North Pacific Management Council before becoming Fish and Game's Director of Commercial Fisheries. In Kodiak, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The U.S. Senate has passed a bill Democrats say will benefit small businesses. It cleared the Senate yesterday on a vote of 61-38, with Democrats and two retiring Republicans supporting it, George Voinovich of Ohio and George Lemieux of Florida. Senator Lisa Murkowski joined with the rest of her Republican colleagues and voted no. The House must still pass the bill before it becomes law, but it's expected to do so easily next week. The aid package includes $12 billion in tax relief for small businesses and $30 billion in loans that would go to community banks to give new loans to small business. Alaska Senator Mark Begich supports it and says that loan money will help more Alaskan businesses get off the ground.
The $30 billion loan fund, which will leverage against private sector probably another total $300 billion available through community banks to really allow small businesses to expand by inventory and do what they've been wanting to do, because what we've clearly seen is the large banks are not releasing the capital that small businesses need to expand.
Begich dismisses Republican criticism that the bill is a bailout fund. He says it will help local community banks at the same time it helps small business. And he notes that the $30 billion is in loans that will have to be paid back. Begich says the $12 billion in tax relief will create more certainty for small businesses. He also says a number of business groups that typically support Republicans are backing the bill. Next on the Senate's agenda is deciding whether to extend the decade-old tax cuts from the George W. Bush era that are slated to expire at the end of the year. However, it's not certain Congress will be able to reach enough of an agreement to vote on them before the November election. Passage of the small business bill will likely be welcomed by the private sector. The last debt crisis made lenders wary and in turn made credit unattainable for many businesses that want to expand. Anchorage Chamber of Commerce President Sammy Glasscott says 85% of their members are small businesses and many of them are hampered by the credit crunch.
Within the past year, we've actually been approached by small business members whose access to the capital has been cut. And whose ability to grow is severely limited by the diminishing lines of available credit. In fact, one member shared that his business has had the best sales yet over the last year, but traditional finances, it isn't available, and the credit lines are consistently being lowered. This has hindered his ability to purchase inventory and expand his business and grow his sales. So it's actually made him stagnant.
Glasscott says the chamber has not yet taken an official position on the small business bill. There's a new gold rush underway, and it's nationwide. And according to the Better Business Bureau, just like the gold rushes in the past, it's attracted more than a few dishonest characters. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Unlike the prospectors of the past, these gold seekers use neither shovels nor sluices. They've turned to television with ads featuring excited folks waving checks and cash. These companies urge us to dig through our dresser drawers or mine jewelry boxes for old, broken, or unwanted jewelry and turn it into cash. But too often, the offer is as dishonest as a Soapy Smith poker game. Tara Sims is with the Alaska Office of the Better Business Bureau.
Now, there are some legitimate offers out there, but we are also getting several complaints from different companies who are offering to buy gold or jewelry. These complaints allege that there are discrepancies in the price offer, hidden fees, or claims of lost or damaged shipments.
Sims says several jewelry buying companies have prompted consumer complaints, but two in particular have led the field with especially high numbers. They are Cash for Gold and Money for Gold Holdings, the latter also known as My Gold Envelope. These companies, and ones like them, have proven all too enticing in the state.
There have definitely been Alaskans who have filed complaints through our office about gold buying companies, and that's definitely the reason why we're trying to inform consumers.
If you do decide to deal with one of these old jewelry buyers, Sims says there are several steps you should take to protect yourself and your jewelry. The first is to investigate the company via the internet by double-checking on the Better Business Bureau's website, bbb.org, and then looking up the company itself. Then you need to learn about the gold buying process.
One of the things to do is to get an appraisal from a different third party, maybe even a couple different appraisals about how much your jewelry is actually worth. And you're also going to want to determine the actual scrap value of your jewelry, because buying the jewelry whole versus maybe the company you're selling to only wants the gold out of your jewelry, and if there's gems in it, they're not going to want the gems. So understanding what the company wants from the jewelry and what the scrap value for your metal is also important.
Sim says if a local jeweler won't make an appraisal, ask them if they can refer you to someone who will. There's also the shifting units of weight complaints.
There's some companies that measure with a standard called troy ounce. Some companies measure in grams, others in pennyweight. Now, the companies you want to be aware of, be cautious with, are the ones that are scamming people by saying that they're weighing in pennyweight, but then they pay by gram or vice versa.
If a local jeweler has appraised the value of your gold, make certain the measure the company uses is the same, or you've made the needed conversion. Sims has two other warnings.
One, you're going to want to check out the company's policies in case you don't accept the offer of the price that they give you for the jewelry. What is the return policy on giving you your jewelry back? And the second thing you're going to want to find out is in case something is lost or broken during transit or while at the company's shop, will you get reimbursed for it?
The Better Business Bureau spokeswoman says sometimes the companies put a time limit on how long you have to refuse an offer. Also, have photographs and write descriptions of the jewelry you send. That will help you retrieve your pieces if the company says they can't find them. You can also ask if the company will send an initial estimate based on the photographs, descriptions, and perhaps the local jeweler's appraisal. This information can also be crucial if the company demands you file paperwork to get your jewelry back. Finally, Sim says gold and old jewelry buyers who come into town for a weekend or just a day should also be approached with the same caution as those who use the mail. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
The Legislative Task Force, charged with coming up with a way to pay for post-secondary scholarships for some of the state's smartest students, is finding they need some explanation of what the Parnell administration's bill requires before they can come up with enough money to pay for it. As an example of the confusion left after the legislature approved the program this spring, Homer Republican Paul Seaton asked at a meeting this morning about the amount of time that successful students will have to use their grants. He says the scholarship is valid for only 8 semesters. But the university in Anchorage shows that only 16% of students and only 25% of the students in Fairbanks graduate over that 4-year period.
I mean, we're talking $20 to $40 million a year, depending on whether we have a needs-based component from the legislature. And I'm hearing from the largest institutions in the state that, you know, it's not going to even cover the duration of most students' required or effective study time.
Diane Behrens, the executive director of the state's Post-Secondary Education Commission, said that's come up before and needs to be addressed. Only part of the issue can be dealt with by regulation, and students will be informed that the value of their scholarship will decrease if they take less than a full load of courses.
I think there's going to be a combination of factors relative to our scholar recipients that should produce markedly better four or five year graduation rates. So I think that rather than accept that, you know, the reality of current data and current outcomes, that the objective is to have this cohort of students drastically improve.
The task force will next meet on October 8th in Fairbanks with a report due to the full legislature and the governor by December 1st. More baby boomers live in Alaska than any other state. And AARP is the largest single-member organization in Alaska, with more than 91,000 members. Those baby boomers begin to turn 65 next year. AARP National President Lee Hammond calls January 1, 2011, the symbolic beginning of the aging of America. Hammond has been in Alaska this week to demystify federal health care and Social Security, perhaps the most important laws for those facing old age. In Juneau on Tuesday, nearly 100 people turned out at 7 a.m. to hear him. He also spoke in Anchorage and Ketchikan. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander reports.
AARP is not an organization for old people. Membership can begin at age 50, retired or not. And years ago, it gave up the name American Association of Retired Persons. Over the last century, according to the National Center for Health Statistics, life expectancy at birth increased from 46 to 75 years for men and 48 to 80 years for women. Less than 20 years from now, the number of adults over the age of 65 will have nearly doubled from what it is today.
One out of every 5 Americans will be 65 or older.
AARP National President W. Lee Hammond says that's a major reason the Federal Health Care Overhaul, or Patient Protection and Affordable Health Care Act, is a good idea. By the year 2030,
the 65 and over population will grow faster than the general population in all 50 states.
Consider Alaska. The last frontier is aging at a faster rate than the rest of the country. Between 1990 and 2000, the number of residents over the age of 65 grew 4 times the national average. The capital city is aging even faster than the rest of the state. The latest Juneau Economic Indicators report estimates that 30% of Juneau's population will be over 55 by the year 2020.
Our ability to adapt our healthcare system to an aging nation may turn out to be the paramount challenge for America, and most certainly for Alaska in the 21st century.
Hammond heads up the AARP Board of Directors, which sets policy for the organization. It's a volunteer post, and his 2-year term began as Congress took up health care reform. He testified often on behalf of the AARP's 38 million members, and he'll be on the hot seat again as lawmakers debate changes to Social Security. The nonprofit, non-governmental organization was founded 62 years ago. It grew out of an association for retired teachers created in response to the need for health insurance. AARP has become one of the most powerful lobbying groups in the U.S. It also has earned a reputation for providing credible information.
In today's society, everything becomes viral the minute after it is said, one way or another. And the things that get the most play are the things that are incorrect and maybe have a little basis in fact, but are built up the wrong way. So those are the things that we try and work with.
Remember the term death panels? It is not part of the new health care law and never was. But it's one of those rumors that went viral, and some older Americans still worry.
And what is vitally important for AARP members, the new law leaves medical decisions in the hands of you and your doctors.
It's estimated the new law will help 32 million Americans who have no form of health care. As Hammond on Tuesday was clarifying the requirement that people purchase some sort of medical insurance by 2014, a federal judge in Florida said he likely would allow a lawsuit challenging that provision to proceed. Alaska is one of 20 states joining that class action suit. The law says those who choose to remain uninsured will pay a penalty of $95 or 1% of their income, whichever is greater. Hammond says that's the only penalty.
People will not be fined, for example, if their income is so low that they don't have to file tax returns, if the premiums for the cheapest insurance plan available would cost more than 8% of their income. And no, the government will not seize property or use liens to enforce the law, nor will it send people to jail.
Federal agencies are currently writing regulations for the complicated and controversial Health Care Act. Much of it doesn't go into effect until 2014. Organizations like AARP are closely monitoring implementation of the new law, and Hammond says AARP will provide objective information that can be trusted. The AARP website is updated frequently. It's www.aarp.org/getthefacts. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jacob Resnick in Kodiak, Len Anderson and Ellen Locke here in Anchorage, and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.